You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. In today's episode, we get to share another crossover episode with The Lutheran Witness. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. In our crossover episode with The Lutheran Witness today, the Reverend Roy Askins and I had the opportunity recently to sit down with the Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Reverend Dr. John Sias, and learn more about the nominations process for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Here's that conversation.
Hello and welcome back to the Lutheran Witness Podcast. I'm your host, Roy Askins. Here today, we have something really special. We're doing a crossover with Coffee Hour. So we have with us today, Andy Bates from KFUO. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing well. Good morning, good afternoon. Depends on when you're listening.
Yeah, whenever you're listening. Good to you. Good to you, Andy. Today, we have something very special. In addition to being a crossover podcast with KFUO, we have the Reverend Dr. John Wollenberg Sias. How are you doing, Dr. Sias?
Just fine.
Dr. Sias is Secretary of Synod.
Allegedly.
So I've been told. And today we are going to do a very deep dive on nominations in the LCMS. Now there's a need for nominations, and we'll help people understand how the broader Synod operates when we talk about nominations, largely in connection with conventions and elections. So this is really an important topic, Sias, right now, Dr. Sias, for what we're dealing with, for what you're dealing with right now.
And timely. Exactly. Yeah.
So what's going on? Why is this particularly timely right now?
Well, it's particularly timely because we have just finished in our suite of district conventions electing the Committee for Convention Nominations, which is the body that's charged with receiving all the nominations and evaluations material to determine who will be on the slates at the 2026 convention in Phoenix in late July of 26 for all the offices, boards, and commissions of the Synod, except for the president and vice presidents. So all the officers other than the president and vice presidents is the secretary. That's the only one that's there. But then your board of directors, your mission boards, boards of the Synod-wide corporate entities that elect at the convention, seminaries, colleges, universities, and then the Commission on Theology Church Relations. So all these important functions rely on nominations that will be processed by that committee. And in order for that committee to get them and process them, they have to be submitted by the middle of October.
Do you have a hard deadline? What's the hard deadline there, Dr. Sias?
We do. That hard deadline is going to be October 18th.
Okay, so.
Which is 9 months prior to the opening of the convention.
Oh, okay. Wow, 9 months. That's a great range of
marker there.
Yeah. Okay, so. Give us an idea. How many nominations, how many positions are being nominated for?
There are roughly 60 positions up for nomination. It varies a little bit from convention to convention because some of the positions are for six-year terms, so there are alternations that occur. Some of the positions we only do every other time because of that, because they're not staggered terms. And there's always the possibility that the convention could add a position here or there. And I have it on good authority, there may be a position added on one of the Synod-wide corporate entity boards elected by the convention, just to kind of balance out the number that's there. So I'll be advising our Committee for Convention Nominations to prepare an extra in the jump seat for that one should the convention go that direction.
So how many so you have roughly 60 positions, potentially an extra position in there. How many nominations would you like to see from the people of the LCMS to fill those spots?
So this is sort of the shocking piece. You know, we got those 60 or some positions to fill. We require the committee to find two candidates for each one of those positions. So that gets you to a pool of about 120 people if you only have two, which in some cases there are more for extremely popular positions like secretary. You know, we get a whole bunch of people that want that job. Half may be nuts, but has no aspersions to current occupants. But, you know, for other positions, there may be fewer. But for a lot, you'd wish to have more than two. And sometimes we even wind up with people overlapping. One person that winds up on two ballots or sometimes even three ballots. And you know they can't do all three because
they're
limited to being elected to one spot. So, you know, 120 is the very bare minimum number of people that you'd have to have. We get, at our last convention, I looked back at the numbers a little bit, we got maybe 450 total nominations for the 60 or 70 positions that were open at that time. About 350 of those were willing to go into the nomination process to be considered even to be put on a ballot of some sort. And then, you know, about 140-ish, 150 of those actually wound up getting used on the ballots that were presented to the convention. The other ones go into the pool, which is something we can talk about a little bit too. And there are other reasons the pool is important. But to me, it's a little bit shocking. I mean, we've got still, you know, 1.3 or so million confirmed members out there in the Senate, 5,800 congregations, 5,200-ish parishes. And every person in every pew, even the kids, if you want to, I guess, give them crayons and get them to my form, could submit nominations for any of these positions in the Senate. So, you know, there's a pool of 1.3 million potential nominators, you know, 5,800 congregations that could sit down and talk about this and find somebody to send me for one of these positions. And we get about 350 usable nominations.
So I want to say this again, just to make sure I understand this correctly. Any member of an LCMS congregation, so not members of Synod, but members of an LCMS congregation. And do you have to like you know, have your pastor sign on the dotted line or something?
No.
So any member of an LCMS congregation can nominate.
Right. All we ask, there's an online form. You go to lcms.org/nominate. It's going to ask you for a little bit of information about yourself. You'll have to do the kind of hinky internet thing, you know, of, okay, tell us your email address and then we'll send you a secret code. You can log in. It's kind of fun, you know, if you're into that sort of thing. So you got to go jump through that hoop so that we can definitely understand who's contacting us. And we'll ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself, including what's your congregation. And if we'd ever have a question, you know, we could contact your pastor or that. But obviously, usually we don't have a cause to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's open really that far. And, you know, we're looking for a broad spate of people with skills that a district president or a pastor might not even be aware of, but that you might know as somebody sitting in the pew or having served on a church board with or working with somebody, you know, hey, that guy knows something about worker benefit plans.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should send his nomination up to the Synod to be used for something.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really seems like the goal here is to give you, like, the members of the LCMS the opportunity to really kind of direct the way the Synod's going in a really substantial way.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll probably talk, I think, a little later on, you know, what some of these positions are and what their duties are, what kind of people we need to fill them. But we want to cast as wide a net as possible here, because many of those skill sets are things that we don't, you know, we don't train pastors to do. I wasn't trained to know about corporate governance or, you know,
it just comes naturally to you. Is that what it is?
Well, it's, you know, as I mentioned, a little crazy.
It's divine revelation.
Yeah. You know, different spiritual gifts or non-spiritual gifts, I guess, distributed as the Lord wills, but. You know, we have to cast that wide net to find those sorts of folks because our boards are operating in that nexus of theological fidelity and corporate competence.
Mm-hmm.
And we need the whole package there.
So going back a little bit, you said you had around 450 nominations, around 350 of the applicants agreed to it. And then you end up with about 140 names. So what is the Committee on Nominations doing when they review these nominations that come in?
Right.
And as they select the names that go on the list, which ones do they select? What are they looking at, I guess?
Yeah. So the Office of Secretary has been charged for many, many years with doing the preliminary work for the Committee for Convention Nominations. They're elected these days by alternatingly 17 or 18 of the districts, roughly half the districts do it each time. They're half lay people, half church workers or ordained or commissioned ministers. And that pool, they really only meet once, which is kind of remarkable. Hmm. They come together in mid-January here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of sequester them at a hotel and give them, traditionally it's been about four banker boxes full of printed material. It's still something that's easier for them to do on paper, even though the front end is all electronic today, of files on all the nominees. And they're sorted. They have master files of show me all the ordained, all the commissioned, all the lay if they have to go really deep searching for someone. But they also have a folder for, you know, a given board that will show them who's been nominated and have the full packets for each person that's in there. And those packets include, first, the nomination forms that have come in. So if I say, you know, Roy Askins would be good for Commission on Theology Church Relations. I can sit down, go on to lcms.org/nominate, go to the online form. I'll fill that out. And it'll ask things about me as the nominator. It'll ask my impressions of you. Why do I think you'd be good for something at the Synod? Do I think you're a credit to the Synod? Like your theology's okay. You know, there's kind of a matrix of skills. You know, does he have financial skills? Does he have skills working on a board, working with people, settling disputes, all kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. And then there are a couple of questions about, you know, how do you know this person? How well do you know this person? That sort of thing. That form, when it comes into me, it kicks off a chain of activity. One of the first things that happens is a bio form will then go to the nominee, where it says, congratulations, you know, you've been nominated for whatever, provide links so you can get some information. What does this commission do? And then it'll ask you some questions. Mm-hmm. What's your kind of personal history in the Synod, in the district, in the congregation, out in the broader community? What's your profession? You know, what's your education? And, you know, some other odds and ends, things like that. There's also the sniff test, which is really fun. That was added.
Is it like legit called the sniff test?
That was an invention of my enlightened predecessor, Dr. Hartwig. I might have had a hand maybe in it when I was on the Commission on Constitutional Matters. But we had a hard time at the time, still do, finding regents to elect mm-hmm. for our universities. Mm-hmm. And so the supplemental nominee information form was invented. Because the convention asked us, put in the bylaws, anybody that gets nominated for anything needs to be sniffed for whether they could possibly be a regent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get some questions about that. You know, do you have skills particular to higher education governance? You have connections to any universities and all that kind of thing. And that's so even if you weren't nominated for those positions, if the Committee for Convention Nominations is short on commission ministers to serve on XYZ Board of Regents, which is often the case, or commission ministers have a real opportunity there to get on a Board of Regents, because often that category, for whatever reason, is short, probably because most of them are busy teaching school, don't have time to go to more meetings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, they've got opportunity to get on there if they fill out their sniff and have the appropriate skills. Anyway, so the bioforms come in to us. If you say, yeah, I might be willing to do that, then we'll go out to the evaluators. So the nominator mm-hmm. provides a couple of additional evaluators. The nominee provides a couple of evaluators. And then there are some automatic evaluators. You're mm-hmm. depending on who you are, your district president, your circuit visitor, maybe an ed exec or something, maybe your pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're an incumbent, probably the chairman of your board, you know, your executive, that sort of stuff. So we go out then with a round of forms to those people. And they provide that information for us, and all that gets put together into the packet that committee's gonna have a look at and weigh you against the other people that are there, the other nominees.
You're listening to the Lutheran Witness Podcast on the Coffee Hour. We'll be back in just a moment.
How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today we have another crossover episode of the Lutheran Witness. The Reverend Roy Askins and I had the opportunity to talk with the Reverend Dr. John Sias, Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, about the great need for nominations for several boards and committees across Synod leading up to Synod Convention in 2026.
So they do all this in January is when they then weigh and evaluate all these as they're sequestered away in a hotel somewhere.
We collect all that stuff and then in a mad rush, dump it all for them, get it organized. I brought along...
I have to say, that's a lot to organize in like 3 or 4 months.
It's crazy, like I said. I brought along for show and tell, you know, since no one can see what we're looking at here. A three-ring binder, this is actually one that we give to them at that meeting, which includes... the information on all the offices and just the the kind of summary lists of those that have been nominated. It's almost like in the old, remember the old green and white lined computer paper? You know, you got kind of two lines to describe each person.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that gives you an idea of the amount of information they're dealing with. And that condensed form, it fills up a book like this. Mm-hmm. So it's a big project, fun project. I've served on that in 2013 and enjoyed it.
So we have nominations. We come up with about 140 names that go on these nomination lists. There's also a pool. You mentioned a pool, and this pool is important for a number of different reasons.
Yeah. So the 140, roughly, those are the ones that wind up going on the actual ballot. Mm-hmm. And the ballot is important, and it's the principal output of the Committee for Convention Nominations. It is possible for folks to get nominated from the floor at the convention. If the body of the convention kind of feels, you know, there's not somebody I want to vote for on that ballot, which we don't like to see happen because it kind of throws things into a panic at the convention to get the proper information put together for those folks that have been floor nominated, to give a fair opportunity to people to get an idea to know who they are. Mm-hmm. But it can happen. Sometimes a committee, you know, is a little lopsided one way or another, and a decent proportion of the convention feels, you know, there's not really somebody that is my choice here.
You mentioned a nomination can happen from the floor in convention. Who can make a nomination? Who can nominate from the floor?
The voting delegates can make a nomination from the floor, and there are forms and procedures for that. But it's more difficult if the individual is not in the pool. So the pool is the pool of all the people whose names have been submitted to the Committee for Convention Nominations for anything before that October 18th.
Because you have all that data assembled.
In theory, we have the data, you know, assembled. You know, I suppose, interestingly, even if they decline the nomination, we don't have information on them, they're still in the pool. You know, it's the making of laws, there is no end. But the pool's interesting for that reason. It's interesting also for the reason of the sniff test, that anybody that's in the pool gets tested and is kind of made available. And their names now are going to be made available through the triennium, through the Concordia University system as a resource for the universities themselves, for districts, and for CUS, as they look to appoint additional regents, because not all the regents are elected by the convention, Senate convention.
So being in the pool opens up a whole bunch of different opportunities.
So being in the pool gets your name, you know, through the gateway, as one might say, into, you know, this realm of service for the Senate.
Which then helps us understand why 450 names is so important in many ways.
And it's not enough. I mean, when I think of you know, 5,800 congregations, I'd have to believe that more than 1 in 10 of those has someone in the congregation that has gifts to offer for regulating the work of the Synod in some respect. Mm-hmm. You know, I would venture to guess that every one of our congregations has somebody that could probably be useful for something.
Well, let's talk about that. So, I mean, when you're looking, let's say, Ava Maria, my daughter, is out there and she's looking for people to nominate. What should she be looking for in terms of, you know, I want to nominate somebody for this role? What should she be looking for?
Yeah, so some of the things are, and there is a document actually that talks a little bit about this in broad strokes at that same lcms.org/nominate page. There's a call for nominations document, which has a memo from me on the front. You can skim through that. But then after that, there's a description of each of the offices that's up for nomination and some general guidance to nominators and nominees. So I'll mention just a few things, but all the scoop is all up there. There are things that are common to all the offices. I mean, I think, a solid Christian person with a good understanding of the faith and just a good adult ability to operate and live in the faith is so important for these positions. For two reasons. One, to understand the significance of the things that are governed for the broader life of the church. And the other is more internal, just simply to enable those kind of relationships on a board or on a commission or with a staff that allow things to move forward in a good churchly way. You know, we need people that can relate to each other as Christians on these boards and in a responsible way, in a way that is in the best interest of the whole church. So that's kind of a basement level sort of a thing. From there, it kind of depends on what the responsibilities of the particular office board or commission might be. Guess what the most popular items for nominations for ordained ministers are?
I don't have a clue.
Most popular items?
What does every pastor, what does every pastor want to be nominated to?
CTCR.
Okay, CTCR is a big one. We get plenty of nominations for that one. The other one is the seminary boards of regents.
Really?
Because everybody thinks they know how to do seminary better than seminaries do, right? So what better chance to do that?
To demonstrate it, yes, right.
But my point is, you know, there are those positions that require, especially for the ordained ministers, a particular level of theological acumen. Mm-hmm. And so CTCR would be one of those, the seminary boards of regents, where those ordained members maybe look to provide, you know, a lot of the guidance from a governance perspective as to how we're shaping these, you know, these individuals. Mm-hmm. Other types of boards call for other things. The Synod Board of Directors, for example, which I serve on, you know, we have the president who handles the ecclesiastical side stuff. We've got the mission boards that are charged with kind of helping to govern how national, international mission go. The Board of Directors is charged principally with property, business, and legal concerns. And so you might know a layperson who's a good Christian lawyer, who's been maybe involved on a board of a nonprofit or done some other kind of corporate work where they understand, you know, how a corporation carries out its finances, reports as a nonprofit, how it, you know, understands its legal obligations. So, you know, they're kind of more specialized roles that way that get into things that we think of as secular vocations or secular aptitudes, but nonetheless have our place in making the things that the church does in the world go forward in a good way.
While we're talking about and kind of shifting over to this conversation about boards and how they function, first, a really simple question. Can you explain the difference between a board of regents, a board of directors, or a board of trustees?
Well, these, I mean, in a legal sense, these are all really this kind of the same thing.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
A board of trustees is typically with regard to specifically a trust, which is kind of a limited sort of a corporation. And okay. And regents we use more for our educational institutions. You know, that it kind of has that connotation. But legally, the board of regents of one of our educational institutions, or the board of control, as it used to be known, mm-hmm. At a former time in the bylaws, legally, they are the directors.
Okay.
That's who helped form KFUO.
Really?
Yeah, the Board of Control. Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
That's how long ago that we used that terminology.
That's right.
What sort of time commitments are we talking about when you're nominating somebody for a position like this and these type of roles? I mean, the Board of Directors for Synod, I've seen their dockets. Those things are huge sometimes, right? What sort of time commitments are we, as we're looking for nominating folks, like what sort of time commitments?
One would want to be a rapid reader, right? The ability to skim and digest and pull out the important nuggets from this meeting, 638 pages so far, just in the main docket.
Yeah.
Plus an appointments docket, it's probably a couple hundred pages, and reports from agencies, another 120-some, I think it was this time. So one has to be adept at digesting information that's not exactly Dostoevsky. It's not novel form. But yeah, it is a commitment. Our board of directors, for example, we meet four times a year. We do meet generally in person. Mm-hmm. And it's about a day and a half meeting, but every board member does committee service. Mm-hmm. And every committee meets quarterly at least. So, you know, that's another few hours each quarter at least actually in meeting, plus many, many hours, I would imagine, digesting material and mulling things over, researching stuff.
So a committee would be a subset of the board or a subset of the board with additional people involved? Like what would it, how would
a committee, that? A committee of the board of directors is a subset of the board, sometimes augmented by some staff. So we presently have three chief standing committees, the governance committee, the finance and audit committee, and the personnel committee. And different standard items are routed to those committees first for some kind of study or action. Governance committee, for example, is charged with maintaining the board's policy manual. And so every quarter they're reviewing the board's policy manual and bringing changes that need to be made or sometimes handling topics that arise where new policy needs to be generated or something needs to be looked at. So even within a particular board or commission, you know, Commission on Theology and Church Relations also has subcommittees within it. Even within a board or commission, there are specializations, niches for people with particular skills.
What boards would you say are the most intensive, like labor? Like how would you kind of rank the overall, you know, workload of the various boards?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I have the most intimate knowledge, of course, of the Synod Board of Directors serving on that and taking the minutes of it. And that seems pretty intensive from writing it all down, which is maybe another point, just kind of a side thing. But, you know, the minutes of our board, the Board of Directors, and of many of our other entities too, they are available to members of the Synod, to Synod congregations or pastors that can request them or can find even the BOD minutes we post just for anybody on the internet. And if you want to familiarize yourself with what's going on at a board, or you know, perhaps if you really want to, if you've been nominated for something and really want to stand out as an impressive nominee, to have some idea of what the thing does, you know, is pretty good.
Well, and let me encourage those of you listening. I mean, you should really look these things up. We use these when we're writing reporter articles on what goes on with the board and what the board's doing. There's a lot of information in there that's actually quite helpful to understanding what the Board of Directors does and how the Synod is operating and functioning.
And to understand the reality of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we as I said, you know, and kind of jokingly, right, that every pastor knows better than even the seminary they went to, that he went to, how a seminary should train pastors. You know, we all are natural experts in everything until we find out that the thing is actually hard. And, you know, to wrestle a little bit just with what the boards of regents, the board of directors, mission boards, with the whole scope of what they're charged with maintaining for the Synod. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to see new board members coming in and think they'll fix everything and realize, you know, this is a much more complex and team-oriented fixing activity than I thought it was going to.
Thanks to the Reverend Roy Askins and the Lutheran Witness for giving us the opportunity to share this crossover episode with you, learning about the nominations process for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.